Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, last Saturday, Malaysia announced that it would be joining 172 countries to participate in the COVID-19 Vaccines Global Access Initiative, known as COVAX. COVAX is a pooled procurement mechanism for new COVID-19 vaccines that aims to provide participating economies fair and equitable access to vaccines by pooling purchasing power from these nations across a range of candidate vaccines. So joining us on the show tonight to discuss COVAX prospects and limitations, we have Dr. Koh Swee King, one of the founders of the advocacy group, the Malaysian Health Coalition. Swee King, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here. Now, and it seems that Malaysia joined COVAX at the very last minute. But then, you know, if you think about prior to that, there were a lot of voices in support of Malaysia joining COVAX, but there were also some more, I would say, cautious voices, warning us perhaps against it. Now that we have announced our intention to join COVAX, where do you see the possible trade-offs in this decision?
Well, Melissa, we'll have to begin by firstly stating that COVAX is the least imperfect vehicle that we have. And a lot of people are investing a lot of hopes into COVAX, thinking that it will be a magic solution for what I would say the failures of the global governance architecture. So, for example, what I mean to say is that the United Nations framework today celebrating its 75th anniversary is actually one of the institutions that we would expect to be taking the lead in distributing a scarce resource around the world. But because of rising nationalism, the human societies being organized along nation states as opposed to having a world government, we're then investing, humanity is investing a lot of attention, scrutiny and hopes into COVAX, thinking that it will be the be-all and end-all solution for the distribution of a scarce resource, in this case a COVID vaccine. So I'll be the first to say that it's the least imperfect vehicle. There are many limitations, and I think we can talk about that. But on balance, the trade-offs are that this is probably the best bet that humanity has in ensuring fair, equal and speedy access to a COVID-19 vaccine.
Right. I do want to say that, you know, we'll have to get into the details of this system because it does have two tiers. It only promises 20% of the population of any participating country access to vaccine and so on and so forth. So before we get into that, the question that arises, I guess, in my mind about this is whether, you know, we poo-pah, vaccine nationalism as being, or poo-poo rather, vaccine nationalism as being bad. But, you know, when we look to our leaders, we want them to do the best they can for Malaysia. So in some sense, we are also nationalists. Multilateralism is great, but not at the expense of national interests. Do you think by joining the system, we have the national interests at heart?
I do, Sharad. I agree with you very much so that even Malaysia would be having some sort of vaccine nationalism on our own. For example, on the heels of the announcement that we're joining COVAX, the Minister for Science, Technology and Innovation also announced that Malaysia is in discussions with some Chinese vaccine producers, and that we are also pursuing some bilateral and separate agreements outside of COVAX as well. Vaccine nationalism is a term that's often bandied around. I think we should be realistic about it, because voters, taxpayers and citizens belong to nation states, and although this is a species-wide problem and we really should have a species-wide solution, COVAX is our best attempt at the species-wide solution, granting the realistic problems, shall we say, of the responsibility of sovereign governments to their voters and to the taxpayers.
Okay. All right, well, I want to talk a little bit about the structure of COVAX, about the fact that it's kind of separated into the wealthy countries and the low and middle income countries. About 80 high income countries will finance the COVID-19 vaccines from their own budgets, and 92 or so low and middle income countries will receive financial support. Malaysia has been classified by the WHO as a upper middle income country economy. That means we will be self-financing. So what are the trade-offs in that? Because that is a huge cost commitment for the national budget.
First, let's talk about the cost itself. Imagine you're booking a hotel room. So you pay a little less if you committed to the hotel room, and you pay a little more if you want the option to cancel. So Malaysia has the option of paying a little less. For example, it's only $1. It's $1.60 for one dose of vaccine in the committed path, and in the, shall we say, non-committed path or optional purchase agreement. That's the path, the name of the path. You'll be paying $3.20. So Malaysia has that option, but we do have to fork out the money in the first in the beginning as a form of because we're self-financed. Melissa, to elaborate a little bit on Malaysia's status, I would say that Malaysia's in a bit of a reverse Goldilocks scenario. Reverse Goldilocks in the sense that we're not rich enough for us to be able to self-finance very, very comfortably, but neither are we so poor that we need a foreign assistance. So it's that uncomfortable middle that we find ourselves trapped in, alongside a few other upper middle income countries. We're not Europe or North America, but we're not, shall we say, in Africa or in the developing parts of the world as well. And for that particular group of countries, the COVAX facility is strangely not really supportive, because we've got the self-financing countries when they're very comfortably able to meet their requirements, and the poorer countries will be helped and aided by overseas development assistance. But it's those countries in the middle that will find it difficult, and Malaysia is one of them.
Now, I do want to ask you about the pricing, because it seems that the critics are saying the pricing is not set yet. The number that you mentioned isn't the final price of the drug, is it? It is just the initial commitment to the pool of money that COVAX feels it needs in order to engage in this particular arrangement. Could you explain further?
This is very true, Sharad. Well, there are a few factors, and I'll just give a bit of a laundry list. The first factor is the actual production cost, which nobody can estimate because we don't know the complexity of the vaccine. We also don't know how many doses are required. And it could be the scenario envisaged by COVAX is 2 doses, but we could need 3. Or a booster dose or a fourth dose as well. So these are the complexities around the pricing. And because we don't know yet, we aren't able to really project the price. But most analysts are projecting a price of between $10 to $20 for the entire course of the vaccine. And that appears to be a fairly reasonable number, which could be driven down with economies of scale. And that's what COVAX seeks to do. By providing an advanced market commitment, they are assuring manufacturers that it's okay for you to invest in building more factories. And when you invest in building more factories, you'll be able to drive the unit cost lower, which could see the price coming a little less than $10. But all these things are projections at the moment.
I mean, you know, speaking, you have, you know, on a previous show, you know, kind of explained a little bit about the COVAX facility. You said it's like insurance. You're just spreading risk, right? And the way the spread risk is, Malaysia doesn't necessarily have to choose a winner, right? We have a group winner situation. But of the 170 vaccine candidates, COVAX is only committed to, I understand, 18. 9 that are for sure, and then... but there's no guarantee that those 18 will be producing the winning horse, is
that
it?
That is true.
So what happens then?
Well, for a start, there are 170 vaccine candidates at the moment in various stages of clinical trials. The COVAX facility has committed to 9 vaccines that it thinks has the highest chance of success. How do they make this determination? Through a list of scientific and technical criteria, judged by experts who are, well, famous and experienced in their field. So that's 9.
But not fallible.
Not fallible. Okay. They're not infallible, for
sure. Yeah, infallible.
Yeah. Okay. So there'll be another 9 candidates, so making a total of 18. Yeah. So the next candidates, number 10 to 18, are under consideration. Okay. Your question, Sharad, is what happens if vaccine candidate number 19 is the winner? And my answer is market forces will probably drive candidate number 19 or company number 19 into the COVAX facility because they want to have the market of 3/4 of the world's population. And that size of the market would be an important incentive for the company to come in.
Okay, but isn't there a possibility, Swee King, that this COVAX group, Compact, might break up in the event that number 19 is the one that produces that? In fact, they will say, okay, I'm going to do good by my own country and my population and my voter base and leave COVAX. Is that a possibility too?
There's a very real possibility. We can approach this from the field of geopolitics and the analysis of power structures around the world. We can also make the moral case that we need to care for everyone else in the whole world. And finally, there's a public health case that a pandemic somewhere is a pandemic everywhere. And we can make all these cases, but the public health and the economic and the moral case aside, it's really a question of power.
Okay, all right. Sweekin, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll come back and continue this conversation with you. But first, we will be speaking after this to Sangeeta Shashikant from the Third World Network. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to consider this.